Dependent at all, or?
Very little.
Very little.
Yeah. So the concept of the podcast is that we've just had breakfast, which, you know, fortunately we actually did this time. Sometimes it doesn't happen. John has a stolen nap. And this isn't a planned conversation. This is us just kind of working out a thing that we're curious about.
Is there more cord here?
Yep. I think my foot's...
You're hugging it?
Doing something.
Okay.
And you see what just happened when I came off mic just a little bit?
Yeah.
I went away. So
yeah.
That's how it goes.
Okay.
So, yeah. That's it. We'll just chit-chat, and then at some point we'll just go, all right, well, thanks. And move on, and then we'll roll right into a little introduction that'll get clipped off the end and put on the front. So.
Okay.
Go for it.
Hey, good morning, Eric. It's good to see you, man. And I've actually been seeing you for a little while. We just went to Prep and Pastry for some breakfast, and we've got friends. We've got friends with us today.
And we never have friends.
We rarely have friends. I want to take a quick moment.
Okay, I want to stop right there and say that you always correct everything I say. Let's get that. I want to go with my hyperbole. We never have friends. Let's just leave it at that.
You're absolutely right.
Thank you. Oh, it feels much better. It's so much better.
There's a quick matter of business that we do need to deal with, and that is that not too long ago, here on Faith Over Breakfast, Eric stated that he had been food poisoned by Prep and Pastry. And so today I said, Eric, you want to go back to this place where you got food poisoning? He said, I didn't get food poisoning there. And I said, you said you did, publicly, to our millions of listeners in Japan who might be coming here to, you know, take a vacation, and they're going to avoid this place. And he said, oh, it turns out I was just sick. That had nothing to do with Prep and Pastry. So we need to clear the record. Eric Siepen is fine eating at Prep and Pastry.
In fact, I know all the waiters.
He knows the waiters. It was delicious. The potatoes are great. It's all good. Very good. So, anyway, Eric, who do we have with us here? They've been hanging out at your church.
Well, have they been hanging out at my church?
Yeah, I mean, you were here, but they
I wasn't them. Here. Well, maybe you... Maybe,
I was here.
Maybe you could introduce me.
Okay, we've got Paul Vanderclay, John Van Donk on for this episode, and Paul Vanderclay has a YouTube channel that has become it's kind of made a lot of moves, and it was kind of on accident, and it had a lot to do with talking about Jordan Peterson originally, and he is a pastor in Sacramento, am I correct?
That's correct.
And he was sharing things on his YouTube channel, came across Jordan Peterson. It got some more traction. He's found himself with a following. And so he was down doing kind of a tour of the Western United States with his lead guitarist, John Van Donk, who's sitting
steals here. Steals napkins from people.
Who does have a Prep and Pastry napkin here.
There's no camera.
Not return it.
A little stealing problem. No, the camera's right there.
You're used to YouTube. Yeah, you hold things up for the camera, but
that's right.
Guess what? Didn't. We used to have a guy who'd come on and who would always talk about our viewers. He would say, our viewers are probably interested. So, you're not the first. But John Van Donk is a friend of Paul's, has been on the YouTube channel, and tell us about how you got to know Paul. Let's just start. Let's just jump into this.
Paul and I share a relationship as co-pastors or fellow pastors in the Christian Reformed Church, and there is a web forum, an email forum where conversations happen among
CRC Voices.
CRC yeah. Voices, yes, and we both participate there. And that's when I first came across Paul with, at that time, before he got into this video thing, was very active and wrote very perceptive and thoughtful pieces that I was drawn to, and I appreciate him on account of that. Then when he began to do his Jordan Peterson thing, I paid attention, and I looked at some of the videos that he produced and was quite intrigued by that as well. And then it turns out that his church is about 20 miles away from where my in-laws live, and occasionally when we go to Sacramento area, I'd call him up and say, hey, let's have breakfast, or, you know, and that kind of how the relationship blossomed. And then it turns out that he is drawing quite a following on his channel.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So it
he
would.
He may even be semi-famous YouTube.
He might be. I mean, there are those YouTube phenoms. The guy we never got around to talking about, who who tells, you know, girls goodnight stories and stuff like that, who has all the millions of followers. Yeah. You really should look into him. He
tells
girls
goodnight stories.
He talks to you like
he's
your boyfriend.
He's a kid who's 16 and he talks to you like your boyfriend, and he makes, you know, probably
like James Taylor and I'm your handyman.
Well, kind of. Sometimes it's just he acts like he's listening to you.
Yeah.
Or he'll act like you're in conflict.
Say, okay, honey, don't worry, don't rush it. I called the restaurant, got the reservations delayed. You're going to be okay. You look beautiful. Put on your makeup. He does this for 15, 20 minutes. He makes, I think, you know, $100,000 a year.
He's making a lot of money on this. He's getting the million views that you might someday get.
That's
creepy.
It's creepy. It made it to national news. And then, of course, you know, he's a Christian kid, so there's that. Anyway, Paul's basically doing that with Jordan Peterson stuff. Not really. I mean, but he's on YouTube. And
we're going to rip Paul. He's not going to say anything.
Let me tell you about Jordan.
Jordan would never
say
that.
Time to go to bed, Jordan. Jordan,
yeah. Oh, gosh.
But Paul, give us...
It is true, however, that people do listen to my podcast.
Yeah,
them to sleep.
You were saying that.
So
it's a very regular, it's very common thing.
Exists.
And I often listen to podcasts before I go to sleep. And if I wake up in the middle of the night and I want to go back to sleep, put on a preacher, put on a podcast. And
Paul, moment of truth. Have you ever listened to Faith Over Breakfast?
I have not. I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah.
So now I'll have to, find it on Pocket Cast. Yeah.
Our major
new voice to put you to sleep.
That's right.
A voice.
Or frustrate you. So the best way to do this, Paul, is just to have you kind of tell us how this all really happened. How did you get to kind of coming down here and having 35 people meet in your friend's church to listen to you talk, and they're all connected to you in some way because of this video process.
Yeah, you've got these personal relationships that started with a YouTube channel. Maybe tell us how the YouTube channel, give us some background.
So a number of years ago, I'd written on CRC Voices, and I'd blogged for a number of years, and I thought about writing some books. But I looked around my congregation and I thought, if I write books, most of these people wouldn't read them.
Right.
And I thought, what will they do? Well, probably they watch TV. And then a member of my congregation named Freddie Schuler came up to me one day, and he had an interesting, interesting career on radio for a while. And he came up to me and said, Pastor Paul, you and I should do a TV program together. And it's like, think CBS and NBC are going to think the same. So I said, I'll tell you what, Freddie, I'll use my smartphone and we'll make little videos and we'll call it the Freddie and Paul Show. And so we had the Freddie and Paul Show going for about over a year. And I had played around with YouTube a little bit. CR Christian Reformed Church Synod, which is its annual conference. I did a post-game show for Synod one year.
Yeah.
And so I was playing around with it, and I was playing around with how could this be used for teaching. I was reading some C.S. Lewis stuff. And then Jordan Peterson kind of came up on my radar screen. I was very interested in him. And I blogged about him, and that didn't get much response. I talked about him on Voices. That got a little bit more response. And I thought, there's something. I was reading.
And this was about 2.5 years ago?
This was October, November of 2017.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I had been reading Neil Postman's Amusing Ourselves to Death and thinking about media, and thought, there's something about Jordan Peterson and YouTube. There's a reason this is happening on YouTube.
Is that where he gets his majority exposure, is YouTube?
That's where he blew up. So there was a bill in the Ontario legislature called C-16, and he was opposed to it. And the story goes that his wife was away one night, and often if he couldn't sleep, he'd get up and he'd write to kind of get his angst out. And he'd been playing around with YouTube too, and he'd been posting his classes online, so he thought, I'm just going to get on YouTube, I'm going to make a screed. So he makes the screed, and the next day it just gets picked up by the media, and off it goes. Hmm. And that's what sort of catapults him.
He didn't need to do that necessarily. He didn't think that was going to be his catalyzer.
No, he had been doing stuff on YouTube. He had been on Ontario Public Television a number of times. He was fairly well known in Ontario.
Right.
Yeah.
But didn't necessarily see that
not for
level
that.
Of acceleration.
Right.
What, though, just for our audience, what is a screed so they know?
A screed is when you... You know, when you get home from work and someone cut you off in traffic and you say to your wife, I just can't stand Tucson traffic anymore, and you just, you know,
go
have at it.
Got
it's not against her. He just did this on this bill.
Gotcha.
And that And so then, you know, the one day there's a protest at the university. There's always protests. And so he asked a colleague, what's this protest about? It's about you. What do you mean it's about me? And so, you know, off he gets launched. Well, I had been seeing that people had been, so then he starts this biblical series. And I'd been reading in the comment section, reading on Reddit, that people now who had been fans of Sam Harris, had been atheists, they're now curious about the Bible. And they're kind of in, and some of them have been trying to visit church. And I thought, what is Jordan Peterson doing to help people know a little bit more about the Bible or to have a little bit of awareness of church? And so I thought, I can make a video. So I made a first video that didn't really, nothing much happened. Then the second video, which was something like, a pastor had three reasons why this pastor thinks Jordan Peterson is important. And that video sort of took off. And I had 15 YouTube subscribers forever. And then suddenly I had 300. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. And then I had 600. And I thought, this is a problem. Because my YouTube channel is mostly the Freddie and Paul Show. Yeah. And I don't know how the Freddie and Paul Show will play for a larger audience. And of course, Freddie was thrilled.
He was like, I told you so.
That's right. They keep asking for the Pepsi endorsement, and it hasn't come yet. I said, well, Freddie, wait for the halftime show. But and so it would grow and grow, and then people would begin writing to me and saying, you know, I want to talk to you. And I'm a pastor, so of course I'd talk to people. So then I'd be having conversations. But they're not in Sacramento, so I'm having it on Skype. And then I would have a conversation with someone, and they would ask me about something that I said, and I couldn't remember. So I started recording them, and then I began noticing that the conversation I had with this guy would probably help this guy. Yeah. So then I began asking people, would it be okay if I would share this conversation on my channel? And a number of people said, sure. And then people started watching the channel, not only for the content I was putting out about Jordan Peterson, but also for the conversations, because they were finding other people like themselves or who at least were interesting, and they wanted to listen to that. And so that just kept growing. Then some people began wanting to talk to me just so they could get on the channel. And it's kept going since then. And John Van Donk comes to me and says, you know, you really got to start a meetup. I'm like, no, you really got to do it. And a couple of other people said the same thing. So, all right, go to meetup.com, got the thing, put it up there. And I thought, I don't know if anybody's going to come. And the first night, a dozen people showed up, completely out of the blue, total strangers. And as a pastor of a small, struggling church, you know, you do VBS, you do all these things to just get anybody through the doors looking for a free hot dog. And here people come, and well, we want to talk about Christianity and the Bible and philosophy and God. And as a pastor, it was like, oh, I've been waiting for this. Like,
this
for
is
years.
What I've been looking for.
Right.
And all of a sudden, meetup.com. John, how'd you know about meetup.com?
I had started a storytelling event in Chino.
Okay.
And in order to publicize that and especially give people the chance to RSVP, I used meetup.com as a publicity thing alongside of a Facebook page.
And this was this church related at all?
No.
Just storytelling. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you because of your goal of just like sharing stories had found meetup.com, used it, saw that it worked
as a tool,
paying attention. And then you are interacting with Paul and you say, ah, I've got an idea. And so then the people who are watching your YouTube videos start to get together.
Right. So so then, you know, the emphasis was always people would come to me and say, well, you're my pastor. I'd say, I can't be your pastor. I'm not your pastor. You need to find a local church and build relationships with not just a pastor, but with a local church, because it's in the face-to-face interaction that a lot of the things that you want for your life, you will actually find. You're not really going to get them on YouTube. YouTube is fine, but it's not really a relationship.
Right.
So you said something that what intrigued you first is what's this connection that Jordan Peterson is making to help people move towards the place of like, I'd like to check out a church. I'd like to begin to investigate what the Bible is saying. What do you think he tapped into? What is it that you...
That's a big question. I think this gets really wonky fast. I think over long periods of time, our perception of what we mean by this word God has changed significantly. and Jordan Peterson reinvigorated in people's imagination an ancient idea of God that made sense to them. Mm-hmm. And Jordan, I saw this when Jordan was having a conversation with Sam Harris, and it became very clear that Jordan's idea of God and Sam Harris's famous atheist, his idea of God that he had been complaining about, they're talking about two different things. Mm-hmm. And so Jordan suddenly reignites in people's imagination what has sort of been built into our language about what God is.
Yeah.
And that then starts them down a road of asking questions, and now they're reading Dostoevsky, they're reading Nietzsche, they're reading Piaget, they're reading Jung, and they're beginning to understand that the story that is in my head, which is in many ways me, because our stories don't age the way our bodies do, that story is intersecting with bigger stories around us. And my philosophy has always been, what do pastors do? Pastors are curators and improvers of stories. And so Jordan was, you know, he was off on his status rocket, and he couldn't talk to all of these people. Right. And I thought, I'm a small church pastor. I'm now having more conversations with people, the likes of which I would go months without and longing for. And so what do I want for them? I want them to be able to be in a spot where they can continue to have these conversations. And even when a channel gets up to a certain size, I can't talk to all these people, right. So they need to talk to one another and meet up, doing meetups, and with a Discord server, which is a way for people to find each other. And then we have some other YouTube channels that sort of happened after mine, because I said, okay, once we've had two conversations, that's it on the channel for now at least, and you got to talk to each other.
So I think a thing that, when I think about the village has had a very online, in my version of things, the village has had much more of an online presence, discussion online, sharing stuff online. With our church, I frankly was so intent on there needing to be the personal layer of experience that we even kind of hid our sermons in the website, where you don't go to our website and come across sermons. And we've kind of rethought that, so we've started a church podcast, and because we've started to go, you know what? We are hearing that people might meet you in a digital space before and then trust you to come into your physical space. So this is a little bit of a new, you know, idea for me, because I hear this. I obviously believe what you're saying, and I'm seeing the evidence of it. But at the same time, there's a part of me that goes, really? You know, people are watching a YouTube video, and then they're going on to a, you know, basically what I would have called a chat room of some form. And then they're actually going to meet these people, and the friendship has already begun. And, you know, so I'm owning that that's happening. But there's a part of me that I would say even within the last couple of years would have said, that's not really how it works. Of course.
Well, perhaps it helps to differentiate between, do they seek this connection in the flesh,
yeah,
at a church or in a group, a neutral group.
Yeah.
And so I think that the neutral group, the meetup group, is kind of like the stepping stone,
yes,
to the possibility that they might,
yeah,
reconsider church. But in the meantime,
yeah,
it is a way to be together.
And I'd read a thing that Tim Keller had written about like a 7-story building, and the 7th story was actually coming and worshiping God in a church. And so there's the entry level floor and then the different things that somebody might travel through. And he doesn't talk about meetups, but it feels like that kind of neutral spaces.
Yeah.
Neutral spaces where people can build relationships and where a Christian could be to meet folks, and to just be a good friend and colleague and so on and so forth.
I call it generous hospitality.
Yeah.
You were saying, yeah. Johnson, you, could you tell us like what happens at a meetup? Like, what would it look like if I were to go? What would I be expecting, and what kind of experience might I have?
Well, to clarify, every meetup is different because
sure
it is its own thing, and people come there to do quilting and to have,
sure,
a bicycle group or a book reading or whatever.
And there's self-proclaimed
your meetup.
Yeah, no, in my meetup, and I have actually very much followed the model that we established at the very first time when we were together. Okay, why don't you all introduce yourself and say something about how you first came across Jordan Peterson and what difference has that made in your life one way or the other. And the interesting thing is that it varies from group to group, I'm pretty sure, because some people come there very much for the ethereal experience, the discussion of intellectual ideas, my own meetup group quickly evolved into, when it became clear that it was a safe place to talk about things you've been thinking about, and then pretty soon it goes down into the things you've been thinking about when you lay awake at night. And then it becomes the things you're thinking about in relation to your actual life. And so it became very personal very quickly. So in my meetup group, and I'm pretty sure that it does scare away a few people, but in my meetup group, there's a lot of very personal conversation going on about, okay, well, what does it actually mean to sort yourself out, which is a Jordan Peterson slogan, and how does that take shape in my everyday life? So now, maybe Paul can speak more clearly to what happens at his meetup, because I'm sure that his meetup group is different from mine. So,
in our meetup group, we started the same way. We start with introductions. One of the things that struck me is that now, in over 2 years of doing this, we've only had one meeting. We meet once or twice a month when we haven't had a brand new person in.
That's amazing, yeah.
Which was really shocking to me. Obviously, for the regulars, the relationships deepen. Other people come maybe once and done. Some people come and then 3 months later they come back. In our group, there are some people who seem particularly gifted at finding interesting topics to begin. We often use the introductory circle to let people talk a little bit, to just get a sense of why they're there. What have you come here for? What do you need from this meeting? And then if we can, we'll usually break up into groups of 5 or 10 so that the conversation isn't too large. And we just get people talking. And if you can steward the conversation, people can often find what they need from the evening. And you never know what that is because everybody's different.
And some of these people may have a familiarity with you from YouTube or something, but some of these are just finding you on meetup.com. They're just scanning meetup.com, looking at where are people getting together and talking, and what are they talking about. Yeah, and they're showing up. I'm telling you, I'm kind of like yet to be convinced on this in a way, or that this is new to me, the idea that like meeting people in the digital space is a really great space to meet folks.
Yeah.
So just tell me what you've learned about that, like that, you know, how that's moved from the digital space to being like a personal friendship, and how that's working for folks, and what if you could teach people in our churches who listen to this and a couple other pastor friends of ours who tune in, like teach us about it, I guess.
Number one, people are lonely.
Yeah.
And if you look at ancient cities, there's all these pillars and roofs, but there's not a lot of walls. If you look at our civilization, there's all these walls. We have now made privacy a constitutional right, and that privacy affords people some of what they want, which is safety, but a lot of it is loneliness and
isolation.
And so in some ways, YouTube conversations, podcasts are sort of methadone. They're not exactly a drug, and they're sort of helping people not be so lonely. Radio's done this for a long time. Television's done this for a long time. The internet is now allowing things to get more specific. Everything that we know about a real-life church and real-life people is that people are hurting, they're broken, they're complicated, and they're able to hurt each other. And so it's all the same stuff that pastors know.
Yeah.
It's helping people find each other. When they hurt each other, seeing if you can, okay, let's get past this hurt. But you often know that on the other side of hurt is the potential of vulnerability and relationship and openness. And so it's helping them to steward those conversations and steward those relationships, and also creating a community in which there's a culture that this happens. And this is part of why I'm so happy to be here at The Village. Because just knowing Rod for all these years,
right.
I see you guys as, you might find big, huge churches out there that have all kinds of people. But what I know about this church is that basic thing that most people need from church, this church does well. Now you might say, oh, look at all the times we failed. Yeah, but it's mostly failure. You do it well, and I've seen that.
Yeah, it's absolutely, and the church that I pastor, though not like The Village, is very influenced by it. I mean, Rod sits with me every week, and I think that there are unique things. We are going to have dinner together. There's a general sense of hospitality and care for one another that comes through. There's a deep, if somebody gets hurt at our church, it hurts the whole church because it ripples and it affects. And so we face those things. It's not like you just disappear we've heard about our church that people know that we will envelop them into community. I think we learned this from a church like The Village, but it's not common. It's not, I would say that more churches have this going on than maybe we think.
Yeah.
But then again, it's very easy to go find evidence that churches don't act like this as well. It's a unique thing that a church can offer, should offer, maybe needs to learn to offer again, instead of functioning like corporations, more like families. John?
Well, I belong to a much larger church.
Yeah.
But one thing that's been helpful for us is to conceptualize in our own mind the difference between digital hospitality, which is how does our website look to the outsider and people who just accidentally bump upon it. And then there is such a thing as physical hospitality, in terms of our physical space. Are we willing to share our facilities with other people for their own purposes? And then we hope that in and through all of that, we can develop some personal hospitality in our hearts for the other, in the sense that can I be friends with a person that I don't normally fellowship with, is not part of my community? Can I welcome them in much the same way that the Bible says, do not fail or neglect to practice hospitality, for in doing so, some have entertained angels unawares, and I work with the assumption that whatever person God brings into our midst may very well be a gift of God for us instead of us being the gift to them.
Yes, and this isn't a one-way thing, right?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So can you, Paul, talk a little bit about, I think something unique about Jordan Peterson and that he's a Jungian psychologist, and so that he offers a very pastoral approach to his philosophy and the way he engages. Can you talk a little bit about that and how that influences the way he engages?
He is a clinical psychologist, and I think the heart of his, if he were to write a personal mission statement, I think it would be to help individuals lead a more meaningful and significant life.
Yeah.
And so he has majored on this. And the part where the Jungian psychology comes in, now, of course, before I knew of Jordan Peterson, the tiny little bit I knew about Jung from the church was a red flag. That's about all
right.
I knew. But through this, I've had to read some Jung and get to know this a little bit. And I think one of the real contributions that Jung made, Jung, as a young doctor, went into was assigned to a mental hospital, and he got there, and the other doctor said, no, don't bother talking to the patients because they're crazy. And he's like, well, isn't that our job to help these people? And so he, against the orders of his supervisor, started talking to the patients and began to realize that the patients were living in a world that was very much connected to their storied world. In other words, the internal and the external stories were connected, and there were problems with that connection. And so he began to work on the relationship between the internal and the external story. And I think that is similar to what Jung was, the son of a Reformed pastor.
Yeah.
And not a very happy father, but this is something that I think we in the church have always known. Because we steward the stories of the Bible, and we steward the stories of people's lives, and we bring them together. And I've seen, I think this is part of what Jordan Peterson has blessed the world with in terms of his work, and many, many people have been blessed through him, I think.
So the question I ask is, I make this transition, and I'm transitioning into the church, or I'm thinking about exploring this. My experience is that you keep saying pastors are used to this. Pastors are used to curating stories, but that's not my experience. And the communities are not used to curating stories and beginning to help people come integrated, as we would talk about at The Village, in their story. How do I negotiate that if I'm coming from the outside? But also, how do I, how do I make that transition if I'm a pastor? How did, I mean, what were there transitions for you as you began to engage more and more with people who you were starting to have a conversation with?
Well, I learned pastoring from my father, who was also a pastor, and my grandfather, who was a pastor. And a lot of what happened in the church in the 80s and 90s, and that began earlier, was America, a church attendance reached its height during the Cold War, and during that drop-off, a lot of people thought, we have to get people back into church, and so church became a big business, and adopted the practices of modern business, and I'm not going to say that's totally wrong, but along the way, people became widgets. If you read C.S. Lewis has a wonderful essay on membership, what you said earlier about, and when someone in church is hurting, the whole body hurts, that's exactly what the Apostle Paul said. It's exactly what C.S. Lewis said. And so these older traditions of pastoring know this. And so what we've seen in America now is sort of the evacuation of the middle, where you have many people in these large mega churches who try to compensate with that with small groups, always with to varying degrees, or the majority of churches, the vast majority of churches in America, have less than 75 people in them.
Yeah.
And in a group that small, those dynamics really come to the fore. And so you look at people like Eugene Peterson, for example, the art of pastoring has not been lost. It's sort of been overshadowed by church as big business. But I think part of what we've seen in the last 20 years is that it's been a real pushback against that because, okay, it's okay to be a member of Costco, but if my church is like Costco, there's a problem.
Yeah. And I think people, I observe that there's a group of folks, and I want to say younger, but that's not true. It's older and younger, who are definitely, you know, looking for that type of church where there's a real connect. And maybe I should say that type of anything, right? Like whether, so it would be, is there a meetup somewhere? Is there something where I can have this like be known and belong? And then there's a group of folks who are still, though they may long for that, it's very risky and you know, are kind of going, you know, the Costco thing, it's not really checking all the boxes, but it's safer.
Yep.
Because I don't have to put it all on the line. And then if they hurt me, it's easy to walk away. How have you observed people that you're meeting in like the digital space who are then walking into kind of what Eric's described? They're walking toward potentially the church or some form of community, processing that potential risk. How's that going? Has that been natural? How complicated? What, you know, how are people responding to that invitation to be known, to come actually be physically present with others?
So when I started this, I would say, you know, one of my early videos was, look, I am not your pastor. I can't be your pastor. You need to find a local church. And then people would write me back. Have you seen what's available to me in my town?
I get like students, because I used to work with students, and people who are, they move out of town and they call and they, I go, do you go to church? They go, no, not anymore. But I'm really glad you're in my life or something. And I go, you know, why not? And they go, do you look at the churches in my town?
Yeah.
Just go online, look at them. And I'm like,
So that's one factor of it. And so, and that's where I really do understand the need for meetups and YouTube and all of this, because things aren't necessarily available. But there's also the other piece, which is people imagine that what they've seen in television stories and the movies, with that within 45 minutes or an hour or 2 hours, that suddenly their issues will be resolved and they'll have this, you know, epiphany experience. And I would say, no, it might take a decade for you to appreciate some of this fruit.
Yeah.
Now, if they had a fundamentally agrarian perspective, they would understand that things take time
to grow. Yeah.
But in our technological culture, people imagine, I'm going to go to church.
Which is they get flipped.
And in fact, churches have gone to, we're going to use big sound, big names, you know, polished sermons to affect an experience in that moment, and people will walk out of that church with a glow. Now, what they confuse that glow with is actually personal and relational growth, which means that, okay, so you've got difficulties in your marriage. Well, generally speaking, after 6 or 10 years, things get better. They're like, 6 or 10 years?
Right.
Yeah, 6 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And the same with church. I was hoping that you would, you know, a week or two, you would fix this up. No, that's not the way it goes.
And it's I think, super frustrating. I mean, I talk to people in our context who had, they grew up in church or something, but they, you know, they got out of college and they went and they found somewhere where they got the goosebumps.
Yeah.
You know, and then they realized, like, they did something that they thought they weren't capable of, some, you know, sin or whatever, and they went, well, crap. I thought I had fixed that. I thought I'd, right? I found a community. I felt the Holy Spirit. I thought we were done. And then maybe this isn't all real after all. And so I think that there's a part of the, you guys at the meetup last night were talking about people's deconstruction stories. And I think what's sent a lot of people spiraling that direction is the fact that they're going, this doesn't feel like it's working. I tried it. It didn't feel like it's working. There's a lot of reasons. But that's one I hear a lot. And I feel like what we promise to people is really important. So we tend to talk in our church a lot about, like, long game disciplines. This is going to be hard. We just preached the other day about, like, you know, Jesus basically tried to dissuade people from following him from time to time, because he said, this isn't, you know, like, look, are you going to be like the builder who kind of does this for half the time and then walks away and everybody laughs at you because you look dumb? You know, think about it. You know, he wasn't like going, hey, just come in, feel the power. You know, it was, he didn't talk like that. And his disciples walked with him for 3 years and then discovered that they didn't get it most of that time, and that had to be frustrating. But that's the story we've been given, is one of time, pain, slow growth, seeds that grow into trees in which all the birds can rest. That takes decades, right?
Yeah.
That's the kind of speech the Bible invites.
So, Paul, I have two questions. One, in just, where do you think you are in this technology? Because this is actually something relatively new. There's not, like, tons of pastors critiquing Jordan Peterson on YouTube, right?
That's which is why you're here, is because there weren't tons of them, yeah.
Right. So that's one. And then where are you in the process, maybe, in the sense of, how long do I want to do this? Like, is this, you know, in the... Because at some point you're, you know, are you going to want to continue, or do you want to do something different? Or so, like, the technology and then you.
Well, the technology is new, and I don't think we have any idea what this is really doing, and that part is scary. When I started blogging, I made the decision that I was going to do this if I found it worthwhile for me. And that's the same way with my videos. One of my second or third video, I said, you know, I might stop doing this tomorrow, and people are like, no, don't do that. But I do this because many of my monologue videos, as I call them, not the conversations, but the monologues, are just me thinking out loud, because I need to think through things. And so that's what I did on Voices. That's what I did on my blog. And I found I can do that on YouTube. And what's really cool is that it invites a community of reflection and conversation, which is enormously helpful to me, because I can't think of everything. I get lots of things wrong. And so then in the comment section, in conversations with people, I learn a tremendous amount. Over the last 2 years have been some of the most fruitful learning experiences of my life. So yes, I do this because it helps people, but I also do this because it helps me. And if it didn't do that, I couldn't keep doing it.
So do you think part of the popularity of your show has, or your, whatever you want to call it, the channel, is partly like the gray beard, the fatherly kind of thing that you offer to people looking for a father, looking for someone to build a foundation for them, give them a place to engage in something more complex and meaningful?
I was just thinking on those same lines, like, here are the two of you who are with us, and we don't have viewers, so they hear your voices.
Oh,
but these aren't, yeah, we have one viewer. Hi, Joe.
Hi.
But, you know, you're used to having the technological conversation with some young 20-something who knows all the algorithms, and that's not you guys. I mean, you're the older guys who are kind of like walking into this after long ministry careers in a way. And so, yeah, how has your age factored into, like, how this has gone for you and maybe helped establish it? And then, yeah, how are you understanding that, having had, like, seen a lot of different types of media in your lifetime?
I would like to speak to this small piece of it, and that is that I've been around long enough to have personally experienced the kind of deconstruction and alienation and loneliness and feeling like you're on the periphery of something.
Yeah.
And then to find ways of framing that and formulating that in such a way that other people can identify with it, that has been helpful for me in recognizing the need for such venues or strategies or whatever. It's mostly out of a pretty existential awareness of the kind of thing we've been talking about here. So that's one piece of it.
Yeah.
I had to be old enough to be able to process that over time.
Yeah. So. It was like at this age you were ready to enter into those type of conversations.
I think, you know, I'm old enough to have seen myself fail at so many things in life.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know.
Isn't that like, that's such a
very liberated.
Such a credential. Yeah.
Well, you know, someone comes into my church, you know, it's funny, oh, you've got a YouTube channel, your church must be. Why don't you visit my church? Why don't you take a look at the people? Why don't you see what a dramatic failure I have been as a pastor and a church leader in many, many ways. My father, I consider him to have had a tremendously successful ministry, but his, you know, according to many of the standards of this world, he was a failure.
Right.
But it's in these failures that you learn wisdom, patience, all of the really deep, important fruit. And here's the thing: you go out and talk to people, and if you can get past the reputational show and get them to admit, you know, yeah, I failed in my marriage, I failed with my children, I failed in my career, I failed as a child, I failed as a parent. I mean, it's just all over the place. We fail all the time. Okay, well, that's in some ways, there's some good news in there. Let's find that good news and see what wisdom you have gained through these failures.
An interesting thing that came up at the meetup yesterday was there's a guy named Ivan who comes to our church from time to time and is just connected with the meetup folks here in town. And he has this reputation for gathering people. And so I didn't ask him the question during our time, but I went to him after. I said, "How you have that reputation, how did you get it?" And his answer to that was, there were a lot of parts, but one part was, he said, you know, I think people want to know they can be vulnerable. So basically, sometimes I go first and I talk about something I feel vulnerable about. And so they know it, that I'm okay with it. And then they can do it too. And then they want to be around because they know it's okay. And I wonder if something that you've done, even in taking that posture, because there's probably the YouTube phenom who's out there they know everything, right? And they gather a certain group of people that feel secure because they hear somebody that feels confident. That doesn't seem like your persona that you've put. I mean, from what I've listened to, that's not you. You're in process. You're figuring things out. You've failed. And I wonder if, like, the flip side of that is that some people go, you know what? That feels more like my life. I can relate to that. And so then, that's the kind of person I might actually want to meet or chat with offline, or, you know, get to know, is somebody who was vulnerable enough to start and to show me their vulnerability, because now I know it's safe. I don't know. I wonder if that is more.
Well, and I think that the other people that present an image or a persona that they have it all figured out, they will draw a different kind of audience.
Yeah.
And maybe that is for such a time as that, that is what maybe what they need, but we're not always there. And
right.
So Paul, I asked one more question, just not to turn this really spiritual, but what you're doing is moving the kingdom of God forward by taking it to ground that it wasn't, right?
Yeah.
And translating it for people. So it is a very frontline kind of experience. So for you personally, over the last 2 years, where's the discouragement been? Where do you feel like the enemy has attacked you? Like, what's that looked like for you as you've gone through this over the last 2 years?
We all have insecurities. So there are times when I try not to listen to my own videos, because if I did, I would probably delete the channel. I get discouraged. There are times when I think, what am I doing? This is insane. And, you know, one would have imagined, well, you know, 1,000 people listen to the rough draft of my Sunday sermon, and then 35, 40 people are there to actually hear it. I mean, how crazy is that? And when this started, people were like, oh, your church is going to fill up with people. And now really, one guy is there. And apart from the meetup is going well. And so then somebody asked at the meetup once, what happens when more people come to the meetup than are coming to the church service? I says, well, I'll worry about that when that happens. But that does happen sometimes. So
I don't. That calls into question, Nick, what is your church exactly?
Exactly. Well, and what am I doing? You know, I don't get things right. I say things wrong. Sometimes I say things dangerously wrong. And then I think, that's on me. Mm-hmm. So, but if you're a loser, also it's like, well, what do I really have to lose here?
Right.
If I were pastoring a large, successful church with a reputation, I could never have done this. I'm pastoring a church that nobody cares about. And so I'm a pastor of an insignificant church that nobody cares about. So what would he, you know, who cares what he thinks? And so.
Which is probably a load of crap, by the way. Just, I mean, because, yeah, your church isn't insignificant and your ministry to them is valuable. But that said, the feeling of risk that you had going out, like, yeah, was low. It didn't feel like you were going to explode this thing that so many people had put their hope in, right?
No, no.
So it felt like, which is probably true for all of us when it comes to vulnerability, that we think so much rides on us and that our churches are so darn significant when, well, anybody could, yeah, you know, could come and do that.
Yeah,
job.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth to it. There's a lot of truth to it. Because we've seen others.
We totally. Right. Yeah.
So have you gotten criticism from people within your community about what you're doing?
Not within my local community. I mean, we have a YouTube comment section. And
yeah, I heard about that.
Almost regularly, some of the fiercest critics are the Christians.
That's interesting.
That's actually... And what totally. Kanye West is saying the same thing at the moment.
What are you? Good company. What is
just
the major pushback that you get from Christians?
Oh,
I
don't push hard enough. That's something. I mean, immediately okay. I would get letters from people that would say, "You had this person on your channel, and that was your chance." A chance to what? To make them a Christian? I'm a Calvinist. I don't believe make Christians. I believe the Holy Spirit does that. So that's
a very helpful thing about Calvinism.
That's a helpful thing. But no, my theology is wrong.
Sure.
I'm talking more about Jordan Peterson than Jesus. I'd say, well, go to my church channel. We don't talk about Jordan Peterson there. We talk about Jesus. But
maybe that may be the problem.
Yeah.
which frankly, like,
oh, I get in trouble.
Which frankly, to me, that's, I'm like, yes, these are, if you're getting those criticisms, like, you are doing something worth doing, because sort of sounds like what Jesus heard, you know, what are you doing at these people's homes, and, you know, and they're not changing, you know, they're not entering into the temple, like, so what a waste, you know, and I don't know, it to me, that's like, and hearing it is one thing, but man, from the outside, it's like that, you're onto something. You know, if you're hearing that from Christians, like, because there's always been the faction of the church that didn't get Jesus, and, you know, or they're in process, a growth process themselves, where they're just nervous and afraid of what could be lost if we don't say all the right things. Man, if you're hearing that from them, you're moving.
Well, and then so the criticism's one side, and the other side is, you know, and a phrase I got from Pastor Rod, which is the clapping gods.
Yes.
And that is in many ways even more
dangerous. Yes. Yeah.
Because I can begin to, you know,
believe your accolades.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Paul, I take that back about you being like Jesus.
Well, thank you.
Just start shopping for his cape.
Yeah. Well, about this celebrity thing, we're going to go on this Paul's
tour.
Paul's fifth missionary journey.
That's hilarious.
But the point of that is that, okay, we are banking on a certain amount of celebrity. Let's just be real about that.
Well,
so we're gathering people in different places. And last night, if that's the beginning of things to come, that's an enormous number of people that are going to show up. However, we also already have a few years under our belt where we know that Paul shows up and the meetup is well attended and there are a lot of people there, and then he disappears.
Yeah.
And the long work of the growth is yet to come.
Yeah.
So we are not banking really on this being the revolution that's going to change the whole Western United States because we have driven up to Vancouver and back. No, we are trying to put a little seed in maybe.
Yeah.
And then let local people carry that ball of hospitality and generosity and sensitivity and vulnerability and let that become something in the end that God will be pleased with.
Well, we probably better wrap it up for the time being. But thank you guys so much. It's cool to have you in town. Thanks for sharing about your journey. As I've tuned in and watched some videos, this was something I really wanted to talk to you about. So thanks for talking to us, and
thank you for asking all the cool questions.
Yeah, no, this is a pleasure. I love doing this. This is wonderful.
Eric, thanks for taking us to Prep and Pastry and for reminding us how good it is and that it's safe and it's good.
It's safe and good.
Those potatoes, those were the most amazing breakfast potatoes I have ever eaten.
They are incredible.
They really are.
So, I hope you spiritually taste those potatoes in your very own mouth and body right now. And thanks for tuning in.
That was bad.
Leave that. That was bad part.
Well, I can just make two podcasts out of this. We'll just let the audio roll.
So okay.
Job can just swap.
Job, want to jump in where...
I got to go ahead and take a pee break first.
So then I won't let the audio roll. So
let's do our intro. Let's do
it. Yeah. Too much. We'll wait for him to shut the door. All
right. Just.
Go ahead, shut it. We'll edit it out.
Welcome to Faith Over Breakfast. This is Andy Littleton from Mission Church in Tucson, Arizona, sitting across from my buddy with the pink keychain, Eric Sieben from the Village.
Yeah, the unicorn.
That is incredible.
So here's the thing. My wife works in the admissions at the U of A. So if you get into the University of Arizona, it's because she approved you.
Ah.
And one of her coworkers, they call him the unicorn.
Yeah.
Because apparently, anytime there's a question that nobody knows anything, he can answer. And so his nickname is the unicorn. So all of his office mates, any excuse, will give him unicorn. So his entire office is full of pink unicorns. This is one of them that's left over from that.
Wow. Well, that's the perfect segue, because today we have the pink unicorn, Paul Vandershaw, with us and his friend John Van Donk. And, right?
Yeah,
did you see how I did that?
Yeah, it was really good.
And we had a really fun conversation. Paul and John are in town. John is kind of an orchestrator of big ideas, I hear, and he has orchestrated Paul's fifth missionary journey, which is a trip across the West Coast, in which Paul Vanderclay, who's got a YouTube channel who's really grown lately, especially around talking about Jordan Peterson.
But when we put a link to it, it's just going to dive.
It's going to...
On Faith Over Breakfast.
Yeah. Our Faith Over Breakfast matrix will all of a sudden get layered on yours, and you're going to go back to just being a normal guy. But which might be fine, as we discuss as we get in here. So anyway, we had a good conversation.
It was really good.
Really glad to have them on. Stay tuned in, especially if you want to hear about what it's like to do ministry in an online space and then see that come home into real relationships and then a lot of discussion that surrounds all that.
Yeah, sounds good.
Nice.
Thanks, guys.